The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. It was a really lovely ceremony this morning. I love the invocation that on Buddhist martyrs. And although my talk isn't going to be on that topic, I wanted to say a little bit about Buddhist martyrs before I get into the subject that I chose. So we started doing this ceremony, I don't remember which year, but it was after we heard about people finding a mass grave in Mongolia with 32,000 Buddhist monks in it. And there are also other Buddhists who were killed because they were Buddhists. 80,000 Cambodian monks and a million people altogether in Cambodia were killed, and in Tibet and in China. But Buddhist martyrs, I don't think they would have thought of themselves as martyrs, it's just what we call them, is different than Christian martyrs. They don't set out to be martyrs. They just happen to stick to their faith and are killed because of it. And in thinking about this, the name didn't come right away, but I was trying to find out who it was. It turned out to be Su Yun in this book, Empty Cloud. I don't know if you have read this or not, but after looking up what I was looking for, I thought, boy, I'm going to read this book. It looks really good. He lived to be, I think, 119, from 1840 to 1959, in his 120th year. And he wrote his autobiography in his 112th year. And then some of his disciples continued the biography after that. And they wrote about the incident I'm going to talk about, which was when things were starting to change in China towards communism, I believe, and he was in his monastery giving the precepts to numerous people who had come to receive it, and suddenly 100 thugs surrounded the monastery, believing that there was, it wasn't for any ideology they were doing this for. Perhaps they pretended they were, because they heard that there were arms and ammunition and gold in the temple, and there wasn't. And they surrounded the monastery, and they took some of the monks away, and they beat up really badly some of the monks, and some disappeared, and one of them they beat to death. And when they couldn't find what they were looking for, they went and beat up Su Yun. And they beat him up to the, you know, he wasn't a martyr because he didn't die, but they beat him up to the point where a normal human being would have died. And they beat him up 4 times. And then when he revived a bit in a few days and they saw he was still alive and sitting in meditation, he was sitting in meditation the whole time, they beat him up again. But when he finally came to, they thought he was dead for sure at that point. But when he finally came to, he told what had happened to him when he went into a deep meditation, samadhi. And he said, I dreamed that I went to the inner chamber of Maitreya Buddha in the Tushita heaven, which surpassed in beauty and majesty all that we have on earth. Maitreya Bodhisattva was seated on a throne and was expounding the Dharma to a large assembly, where I saw over 10 of my late acquaintances. I brought my palms together to salute them, and they pointed to the third vacant seat in the front row on the east side, telling me to sit there. Arya Ananda was the leader of the assembly and sat close to me. Maitreya was teaching meditation on the mind to still consciousness, but purposely stopped to say to me, you should go back. And then the editor wrote, to your monastery. I said, my karmic hindrance is too great and I am unwilling to return. He said, your karmic link with the world has not ended yet, and you must go back now so that you can return here later. Then he chanted a gatha, and for the sake of brevity, I'm not going to read the whole thing, although it's lovely. If it were the topic of my talk, I would, but I'm just going to read the last part of it. Because of your great compassion, this is what Maitreya said to him. Because of your great compassion, you have vowed to save all beings and are now involved in this world of dreams. The evil karma of this aeon flourishes, so be alert, awake to all that happens. Turn not back when from compassion the seas of suffering you sail. The lotus rises from the mud to flower, bearing a Buddha seated in its center. Then I'll go on to say, the thugs who had beaten and tortured the master and who now witnessed his remarkable feat of endurance whispered to one another and began to be afraid. A man who seemed to be their leader asked a monk, why did not the old monk succumb to our beating? The monk replied, the old master endures suffering for the welfare of all beings and also to help you to escape from your troubles. Later you will know why he did not succumb to your beating. The man trembled and never thought of torturing the master again. I thought I had read somewhere that his disciples, and maybe I'm confusing this with someone else, but I couldn't find it, that his disciples thanked him for coming back for their sake. And he said, I didn't come back for your sake. I came back for the sake of those people who beat me. I didn't want them to bear the terrible karma of killing me. Now, I must have read that somewhere, but I couldn't find it. But it kind of shows you what he was like. So he was a remarkable, wonderful teacher. So now I'm going to go on to the topic that I chose, which is trusting in the unknown. And I chose this topic because it is something that has been coming up for me a lot recently. And in actually choosing this topic and thinking about it, which is what starts to happen when you know you're going to give a Dharma talk, I started putting it into practice. And when things scared me, I would say, no, I'm going to trust in the unknown here. And when I was walking up here, when I was during the ceremony, I was a little nervous about doing this Dharma talk, and I thought, no, I'm going to trust. I'm going to trust in the Dharma and not in my fears. So, anyway, here we are. Reverend Master Jiyu told us a story when I was a younger monk about a Nazi judge, and I think some of you have heard this before, during World War II, who gave prisoners the option of going through one of two doors. And they knew what was through one door, and that was a firing squad and certain death. And the other door was the unknown. Because there were Nazi Germany, I'm sure they thought of the worst, that concentration camp tortures, terrible death, that a firing squad would be a better option. And not one of them chose that other door, the door to the unknown. And behind that door was a car that would take the prisoner to Switzerland in freedom. And Reverend Master, of course, was trying to point something out to us, that we human beings are afraid of the unknown and would rather choose the known, even though it is awful, to the unknown, which we don't know, obviously. And she would also say that we'd rather choose the devil we know than the devil we don't know. And of course, the freedom that she was trying to get us to choose, you know, was the freedom of the heart, the freedom from suffering, the burden of the self, the conditioned mind. It's hard to let go. We human beings, like, and as all beings, I think, we want to be secure and safe. We want to control things. We don't want to let go and just see what happens. I remember Reverend Master Khotan giving a Saturday Dharma talk to the laity a number of years ago, and he said to someone who had asked a question, I'm trying to figure out how does this fit in here? I wrote it down, but that you're trying to build a house on a raging, flowing river. And I never forgot that, because he was like shooting an arrow to this person's question, which doesn't happen all that often. He said the house is bound to collapse. What I wrote was, the house of self cannot be maintained in the face of impermanence. So even though we would like to hold on to something secure and safe, we're always seeing this impermanence, and it's always kind of tugging at us that what we think of as safe really isn't safe. You know, the life we try and protect is impermanent, and all aspects of it are impermanent. Reverend Master Jiyu was always, pulling the rug out from under us. If any of us were getting secure in something, she would just do something that would shake that up. And it was good, because she was trying. We were here, and you are here, because we all want to know something else, which is maybe unknown to us, maybe known to us in some ways, maybe known to us in major ways. But that's why we're here. And as monks, we had made the commitment, and she was our teacher, and she was gonna, you know, she was gonna teach us. So I'm going to talk about many different aspects of trusting in the unknown. And I wanted to just say something that happened when I was in my 20s, which I had no idea then would fall into a Dharma talk, a Sunday Dharma talk as a Buddhist monk. When I left college, and I worked for a little while in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and then I eventually ended up in Eugene, Oregon, and lived a hippie life for about 2.5 years. And then I came here. I went out to a hippie farm commune for a couple of days, and I took a psychedelic for the very first time out there. And I was fortunately with a very kind young man who I met there, and we were walking around outside. It was a beautiful day, and it was, you know, a very pleasant experience. And then we had to go back to the house, and we got to the door, and I was scared. And I actually felt like my body would not take me through that door. And I told him, I can't walk in. And he very matter-of-factly said, yes, you can. And I easily walked through the door. And something about that really stuck with me. And I'm going to use it throughout this Dharma talk, because it's an important lesson that the mind can tell us that we can't do something, and we believe it, and we actually can do it. And all I had to have was someone say, you can do it, and I could do it. And it's as simple as that. So keep that in mind. What is the bumper sticker that says, don't believe everything you think? Something like that. So the devil we know is our suffering. And the devil we don't know is what we'll find when we let go. So fear of letting go is just an old fear that isn't real. Like my believing I couldn't walk through the door at the farm. And letting go of the suffering also means welcoming it. And for those of you who've been studying Don't Take Your Life Personally, he talks a lot about welcoming whatever's there. So we welcome whatever's there, and we also let it go. So I'd like to say that trusting in the unknown begins by just coming to the monastery for the first time. You don't know what you'll find here, especially if you spend a weekend retreat here. The first time I came was in my 20s, and I was on the bus from Eugene, and I got, and they said Mount Shasta, and I thought, I can't get off this bus. I didn't know what I would find here. Would they let me go to the bathroom when I wanted to? Would I, you know, all these thoughts were going through my mind, and but I wasn't on a psychedelic, fortunately. I had my whole mind there, and I was desperate, and I knew I had to go, so I got off the bus. And actually, it was a good experience. It was. I came back a month later, and then a few months later, and then I asked to become a monk. So it kind of happened very quickly after that. So we finally get to the monastery. That's the first step of trusting in the unknown. And then we hear the teachings, and we decide to put them into practice. We start to look within, and we don't know what we'll find there. But we trust in something. We trust in what brought us to the monastery in the first place. Reverend Master Jiyu said that we all have an intuitive knowledge of Buddha nature. I mean, she said that because it's a law of the universe. So even if you're not aware of it, something brings you here and something keeps you going. So there's something within that knows. When I would say to Reverend Master Jiyu, I didn't have any faith, she would say, and I know I've said this before, well, you get up, you wouldn't get up every morning, go to the meditation hall and twist yourself up like a pretzel if you didn't have any faith. And she would also say to people who said they didn't have any faith, you have faith that the sun will rise in the morning. So you have to have some faith, even if you don't think you have any. I don't have any faith, but I'm going to go meditate. Why? she would do anything to point her disciples to their own faith and their own intuitive knowledge of the unborn. So Reverend Master Jiyu was trying to get us all to take a step into the unknown, to take a chance. We really don't know what we'll find. Even when we have had glimpses or experiences of the unborn, we don't know what we'll find in our meditation. We don't know where it will lead. And yet we do it. We do it gradually, gradually. And I'm going to leap to what I wrote down as my last paragraph because it kind of fits in here, and then I'll come back. But I have found that what has seemed impossible for me to do in the past is possible for me to do now. And what does not seem possible for me to do now, I assume will be possible for me to do in the future. Sometimes things are very scary and we say, I just can't do it. And then sometimes as we continue our training and the same thing arises, we find that we can do it. It may be scary and it may be trusting in something we don't know, but our faith is strong enough and our... we just know that we have to do it. When I was a young monk, I always wanted to be named a master. All my fellow monks of the same generation were being named masters, but I thought the one consolation was I don't have to do the spiritual examination ceremony, because that's where a master has to stand in front of the altar. And all the monks go up to the person in reverse seniority order and ask them a question from their meditation. And you have to answer from your meditation. You can't answer from your intellect. You just have to be there and just wait for a question to come, an answer to come. And I thought, well, I can never do that. But I was named a master a few years ago, and I had to do that. And I found the first time I did it, it was actually went fine, and the second time was okay. And then I was asked to do it a third time a few weeks ago. And I was going through a really difficult time, and I thought, I can't do it. I can't do it this time. But I didn't go to Reverend Helen and say, please find someone else. I thought I'd just wait and see what happened. And I knew that I had to do it. Sometimes you reach the point where you just have to go beyond your fears. You just have to walk through that door. And during morning service, I was meditating and, you know, a little nervous. And what came up for me was something that would come up when I used to play the organ. I was the organist for a number of years here, and for a big ceremony, I would get really scared. And I'd get up there at the organ, and I'd look at the music, and I'd look at the notes on the keyboard, and I'd think, I don't know what any of this means. You know, I don't know what to do. And then I'd just have to say to myself over and over again, I will trust in the eternal and not in my fears. I will trust in the eternal. And I just had to trust in my hands. And I just put my hands down and they played. It always happened. So during morning service, that came up. I will trust in the eternal and not in my fears. And also the topic of this talk came up. So it was very helpful for me having this topic. I will trust in the unknown. I will go up, I will not give in to my fears, and I will just go there in meditation, and I will see if the answers come. You have no idea whether they will or not. And, you know, it was fine. The answers did come. And if they didn't, I don't think I would have been kicked out of the monastery, but I had to I had to take a chance. So this is what happens when I graduated from college. I said to myself, I will never, now that I'm out of college, I will never do anything that scares me anymore. And then I came to Shasta Abbey and I was, and I had to do all these things that scared me. And, well, that's what happens. You have to. That's what we have to do in life. And in fact, I did that. You know, I always did what I was asked to do, and I did the things that scared me. And then at one point, something happened, and I stopped. And I gradually stopped doing anything that scared me until I was at the point where I wasn't doing much of anything. And I went and talked to Reverend Master Daiswi, who was had been a therapist and also a wonderful monk and someone I talked to from time to time. And he said, you have boxed yourself into a corner and you have to unbox yourself. And you have to start gradually doing the things that scare you. Because it was just fear that was doing that to me. And I started doing that. And it was remarkable. I never said no to anything for a long time. I can't guarantee, my memory's really bad. I can't guarantee I've not said no since then. But whenever something scared me, I just said yes, I will do it. I will take a chance. So that's how I unboxed myself. And now I try to, if something is good to do, I just say yes. Because we know we have to do that. We know we have to do that. And if we can't do it now, we just have to keep on training. And eventually we will. So when we sit down to meditate, we're actually trusting in the unknown. We're trusting in not knowing, being willing to sit with not knowing, to let thoughts and feelings arise and pass without grabbing onto them, without trying to find something, to avoid something. Sometimes our minds, as we know, just wander off. And when we're aware of that, we have the choice to bring our minds back to the present moment. And sometimes we're fortunate enough to not let it wander off at all. And that means sitting with what's ever going on. And it's sometimes sitting in just letting go of everything we're familiar with and just sitting in that unknown. Letting go of everything. Letting go of suffering, of judgments, of everything that arises. And that's what the Buddha did. In preparing my retreat for August of this year, I didn't know that much about Shakyamuni Buddha. And I just assumed, you know, I knew the basic story. And I just assumed, well, he was the Buddha. You know, he went out and, you know, he endured some things that were difficult, but he was the Buddha, and, you know, he was this great man. But in reading about it, I realized that it was not easy for him. He had to give up everything he knew. His wife, his parents, his family, his kingdom, his luxuries, and in search of he knew not what. You know, he didn't know what he was going to find. But he just had the intuition that there was something more. There were no teachers who he could go to like we can go to, who can point us in the right direction. He had to do it alone. And it was hard. I'm sure it was really difficult. As some of you know, Reverend Master Jiyu wrote the music for, a cantata, the Great Enlightenment. And these words kind of jumped out at me when I was preparing this talk, where the Buddha says, I'm tempted to sing it, but I will save you that, because it's really beautiful. A lonely man seeking the way of truth, and not have found in all these weary years. So he had to just let go of not only all his comforts and all that he knew outside of himself, but all that he knew inside of himself as well. He had to let go of all his thoughts and feelings and just trust. Just trust in the unknown. When I first came here, I had a great fear that there was that if I let go, that all there was this dark, negative emptiness, something quite awful. And I'm not sure I believed it completely, because I don't think I would have come here if I did. But that was my fear. And one of the monks, when one of the monks suggested, I was also an angry monk. one of the monks suggested to me that I let go of my anger and see what was there. When I did, all I could think of was, if I let go of my anger, I will still be this miserable person without my anger. So, you know, why bother? I mean, that's what I thought. But I read this quote in Zenna's Eternal Life, and I found it very reassuring and very helpful. So I'm going to read most of it to you now, because just in case some of you have that fear of what you'll find if you let go of everything. And this is in Zenna's Eternal Light, The Heart of Manjusri. And it's written by the great Chinese teacher Si Yun, Abako Kyun. If students of the way desire to become Buddhas, they should not study anything whatsoever of the Dharma. They should only study how to avoid seeking for or clinging to anything. If nothing is sought, the mind will remain in its unborn state. And if nothing is clung to or known, the mind will not go through the process of destruction. That which is neither born nor destroyed is the Buddha. Relinquishment of everything is the Dharma, and he who understands this is a Buddha. But the renunciation of all delusions leaves no Dharma on which to lay hold. If the student of the way wishes to understand the real mystery, he need only put out of his mind attachment to anything whatsoever, especially his own opinions and criticisms. To say that the real Dharmakaya of the Buddha is like the void means that it actually is void, and that the void is the Dharmakaya. And in parentheses it says, conception of cosmic Buddhahood. The void and the Dharmakaya do not differ from each other. Neither do sentient beings and Buddha, the phenomenal world and nirvana, or delusion and bodhi. When all such forms are left behind, that is Buddha. Ordinary people look outwards, whilst followers of the way look into their own minds. But the real Dharma is to forget both the external and the internal. The former is easy enough, the latter very difficult. Men and women are afraid to forget their own minds, fearing to fall through the void with nothing to which they can cling. They do not know that the void is not really void, but the real realm of the Dharma. The spiritually enlightened nature is without beginning or end, as old as space, neither subject to birth nor destruction, neither existing nor not existing, neither defiled nor pure. It cannot be looked for or sought, comprehended by wisdom or knowledge, explained in words, contacted materially, or reached by meritorious achievement. If a man, when he is about to die, can only regard the five aggregates of his consciousness as void, if he can only awake to this in a flash and remain free from the remaining entanglements of the triple world, past, present, and future, he will indeed be one who leaves the world without the faintest tendency towards rebirth. If he would behold the lovely sights of all the Buddhas coming to welcome him, and yet to feel no desire to go towards them, if he should behold the devils and evil forms surrounding him, and yet have no fear, he will indeed achieve the formless state. Wait a second. He will have no fear, remaining oblivious to self and at one with the absolute. He will indeed achieve the formless state. And in parentheses, this is not only true of the time of death, but also during Zazen. And Reverend Master writes that she paraphrased this considerably, so these aren't his exact words. So I hope you find it as helpful as I did, because whatever our fears are, what we find is pretty neat. As you may have guessed, I was a very fearful person when I became a monk. One of the monks said to me, I've never seen anyone as frightened as you. I was afraid of everything. And I was afraid of what I would find if I let go. I was afraid that the unborn would judge me, that I wouldn't be acceptable. And it was interesting because I did a two-week retreat at the Portland Priory in 2000, and during that retreat I saw that the unknown or the unborn was not what I was really afraid of, that I was actually afraid of the karma, and I wasn't aware of that. I was afraid of my old past karma and my childhood karma, and not only afraid of seeing it, but it was also the fear of that karma. So sometimes what we see as really who we are and part of ourselves is just old karmic feelings that aren't true. And I saw during that retreat that the unborn was nothing to fear, that it was welcoming, benevolent, and was my friend. All these things came up, and something I could turn towards. I think Christianity can teach us that. I know some of the monks who came from a Christian background believed this, that if they weren't perfect, that God would not accept them. I don't know if that's a standard teaching because I wasn't raised as a Christian, but that they had to be perfect to be acceptable. But the unborn just embraces us all in all aspects of ourself. When I did the week-long retreat that I did this summer, it was my first one, and I had the privilege of doing formal sanzen with the people who came for the retreat, and that's where, again, you sit in meditation in the north vestry there, and each person comes in one at a time and asks their question. And I found that the self was let go of, and that the compassion of the unborn came through me. that it wasn't anything I did, but somehow the self was let go of, and there were was no judgment of anyone, no matter what they said, and there was just the wanting to say what would be most helpful for that person. And I found that to be such a wonderful experience, to have that happen. So that is my understanding of the unborn, and from other glimpses that I've had, that it's all-embracing compassion. And it's never the unborn that judges us or turns away from us or rejects us. It's always we who do that. So just keep that in mind next time you're judging yourself. And trusting in the unknown, for me, with my particular load of karma, is sometimes sitting with something that is very difficult, perhaps a deep grief or a childhood fear, despair or anger, perhaps doubt, perhaps just not knowing, something from some old karma that can be very believable when it's there. And all the faith you've had in the past is suddenly gone. You know, it's like this is all there is. And you just have to trust. You don't know where it's going to lead. You don't know if it's going to end. There seems to be nothing there to comfort you or help. And anyway, this has been my experience. And sometimes you just have to be with that old karma, because that's how the karma felt. And it's being with that that actually helps to cleanse it. I don't know how much I should say about myself, so I'm debating. I've already revealed quite a bit, which is what I always do in these talks. But I was sitting at our hermitage during a month-long retreat early part of this year, and I was sitting with some really difficult stuff. And it was the same thing of being so believable, and I just knew I had to sit with it. And suddenly, what came up to help me, and I'm giving this example because we're always given the help we need, is what I have found. And what came up was for me was a monk, Reverend Master Mokugen, who was always there for me. She trained here for many years, and now she's in Wales. But I saw her as a deeply compassionate monk. And no matter what I had done, and believe me, I made a lot of mistakes in my training, no matter what I had done, there was no turning away. It was just all acceptance, no matter what I was going through, just all acceptance. And that came up, all acceptance no matter what. And I went into our founder shrine there, and that opened the door to the unborn, where I saw that the unborn accepted me no matter what. And I think we all long for that acceptance. You know, no matter what we are, no matter who we are, no matter how many difficulties we have, we are completely accepted by the unborn. But it takes a little courage. So how long have I talked? So trusting in the unknown or the unborn is not easy and can be very uncomfortable. But when we're asked to take a step into this, when that door opens, we know we need to challenge our fear, challenge our karma. And this is where perseverance comes in. just doing the best we can, keeping on going, no matter what, just keeping on going, accepting the help that is offered, no matter what form it comes in, continuing to trust, getting back on the path when we've fallen off, and then when that door opens, you know, it opens when we can handle it, and when that door opens, to walk through it. You know, if I was asked to give a Sunday Dharma talk 20 years ago, I would have said no. But now I say yes. And so I would say persevere. Walk through that door when it opens. When you can't, keep on training. And then when it opens again, walk through it. And if you can't, keep on training. Just keep on training, no matter what. Keep on persevering. Going on, always going on. That's what we need to do. And there's a quote from Upasaka K. I'm sure I'm pronouncing this wrong. Kye Nanayan, which I'm going to read. It's just a short verse. An inward staying, untangled knowing, all outward going knowing cast aside.